Okay, well, let's start off by stating your full name.
Frederick Joseph Peter Dockrell.
And your date and place of birth?
That would be Halifax, May 25th, 1934.
Okay, so let's talk about the time that you were a student at St. Mary's. You say you came in 1951.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what were, it was the Jesuits at that time.
That's right, yes. Father, I believe it was Father Lynch was president at that time. Yeah.
How did you find the Jesuits as educators?
Well, they were, I mean, I had been educated my whole school up to that time. From grade 1 through to grade 11, I'd been taught by the Sisters of Charity in Dartmouth at St. Peter's School. So, and I was, as a young person, I was kept very close to my family, so it was a really big deal to go to Halifax and go to school. And, of course, we traveled on the ferry then. There were no bridges. And so I was very impressed with the Jesuits in many ways. First of all, is their intellectual capacity and so on was very, and their sort of their worldliness. Those priests that I've been associated with before, that parish priest, were sort of on a different category. These men had a real sense, in my perception of them at that time, had a real sense of the world. So it was actually quite exciting. People were traveled and so on. So it was for a young person who had been kept rather close to his family and school and had not done much up to that time, it was quite impressive to be involved with these men. Yeah.
So when you entered into the school, was it the high school that you were going to?
No, I started as a freshman. As St. Mary still does. Took people from grade 11 at that point. Mm-hmm. And there was no grade 12, it seems. So I won a Holy Name scholarship from St. Peter's Parish, and that helped me to go.
So what was the academic program that you were enrolled in?
Well, I started out in arts. I guess I didn't find that particularly challenging after a year, and I decided to do engineering. I took classes for in engineering for 2 or 3 weeks, and there was a professor there, his name was Alan Sabine, and he was teaching both chemistry and mathematics, and the chemistry program, although I found it quite easy when I was in high school, I took one look at it after being to a few classes and figured if I didn't want to do, or I'd be end up doing chemistry all term, all year, and it looked like it was going to take up more time than I wanted to put to it, so I quit the engineering program so I could stop doing chemistry and started a program in honors mathematics, and that was really quite a jump for St. Mary's to begin an honors program. They had a Jesuit there, his name was Burke Gaffney, who was quite a famous astronomer, and he was sort of behind starting this honors math program. So that I moved into that in the second year. The third year, I actually failed the only course I ever took in university, which was integral calculus, because the year before, the program was so compact that there was a conflict between one of the courses I had to take, and they told me I didn't have to go to class, I could just write the exam. So actually, I ended up passing that course, but I didn't get any of the background needed for subsequent courses. So at the end of that time, at the end of that year, I had actually failed a course that Father Burke Gaffney had taught me about calculus. And then I left St. Mary's. I decided to become a Jesuit and went to Guelph as an novice for the following year. I was actually there 14 months. Came back after I left the seminary and came back and worked in the bank for the remaining part of that second year, and then came back and finished up my degree in arts.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's and eventually graduated in 1957. Yeah, that's why I was 6 years getting through.
You had a taste of all the faculties, pretty much.
Yeah, right. And actually, this my study of mathematics at that time stood me in good stead later on in my studies.
So how did you find the workload and the expectations?
No, aside from the story I told you about chemistry and deciding I just didn't want to do that much work, I didn't find the demands terribly difficult. None of the years I would spent there would have been as difficult as the grade 11 year that I'd spent before getting in.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jesuits were very considerate. I found them. I remember the first year I was sick, and there was a man by the name of Father Rourke, and he taught English, and I had missed a number of classes at the end of the year because of my illness. He phoned me up and told me I didn't need to write the exam because my work was fine. So I didn't find it particularly difficult. I couldn't say what my marks were if I went back and looked at them. I don't know how great they were.
Okay, but let's move on to the recreational activities outside of the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
What was available to the student?
Well, I got involved in a lot of inter-faculty sports. There was the inter-faculty sports at that time were all organized around faculties. So I played for arts or science or whatever it was in, and I played hockey and football. At that level, I also did some track, and I can't remember the name, but there was a man who was fairly well known in the track fields at that time. Used to coach us, and I was sort of training for the 100-yard dash. Not much ever came of that. I never became a varsity track athlete and so on. But there was lots of. Availability of facilities at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a rink at that time, so we used to play in what used to be the Shirley Street Arena, and sometimes at the Forum, I used to, as far as hockey was concerned. The football field was there. It wasn't what it is now.
Yeah.
Right. And then of course, there was always that spirit of St. Mary's was pretty well known in hockey and football at that time.
Yeah. So did sports play an important role on campus?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it was, I mean, the Jesuits were very big on sports, and it was. I mean, as I say, the St. Mary's hockey and football teams were always quite well known. Yeah.
Okay. So aside from sports, what other extracurricular activities?
Well, personally, I was involved with the World University, WUSC, World University, whatever. They had campaigns for raising money for different things, and I was involved with that. Socially, there were the big occasions at St. Mary's when I was an undergraduate were the faculty balls. We used to attend all the balls and they were really big dudes. I remember Don Warner's band, Big Band, used to play at all the dances, and they'd be at the, most of them would be at the Lord Nelson Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Big ballroom there and so on. And they were big events, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big part of the social life. They used to have dances in where the old gym was, which is now where the computer center and so on is downstairs. And you would go to dances there on the weekend. And there was a fairly active social life among the students. We used to go to sort of public dances at the Jubilee Boat Club and at the Olympic Gardens at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you lived in Dartmouth sort of didn't seem to deter that.
So was there any type of student government at that time?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was a student union, and I can't remember who it was. I was never much involved with that outside of the WUSC
mm-hmm.
stuff, but Yeah, there was, but I couldn't remember people were on. So.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your fellow students. Now, were there boarders at the school at the time?
Oh, yes.
You were there?
Yes, yes.
So what geographical areas do you think were represented by the students?
Well, they came from all over. There was only, when I started in 51, including the high school, there were only about 200 students.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't a monstrous place. And this new building was quite an edifice, you know. I mean, it was one that was paid for by the parishioners of Nova Scotia through their weekly contributions, you know, to the churches. That's how that building was built.
Mm-hmm.
The students, I remember particular students from around Nova Scotia. I remember a man by the name of Carl Dujay who came from Joggins in particular. There was the group of us from Dartmouth. The bulk of them were from Halifax. There were students from the West Indies who I remember, but clearly again I don't remember any of their names. There were students from New England. Yeah. But that would be the main sort of groups.
Okay. You mentioned the building. At the time you moved in, the building wasn't finished, was it?
Not quite. It was, the interior was finished. The church, which again is this the big theater on the back there now, is, I don't think was finished. But the main building and the wings were finished because the rest of the students lived in the... North Main Jesuits lived and so forth. The exterior stone wasn't finished at that time, and there were big piles of stone all around the campus as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Various. What role did religion play at the school when you were there?
Big, very big, because I can remember visiting Princess going to the resident and visiting people there, and if you came at a certain time, everybody was out saying the rosary. So they would kneel in the corridors there where the faculty offices are now, and they'd be saying the rosary at a certain time. And the Jesuits, people like Father O'Donnell, used to have a suite in right in the students' residence wing, and there were curfews and so on. But and the residents also had to get up and go to mass every morning as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very much a religious institution. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were there students there who were not Catholic?
I would imagine, although I didn't, I couldn't specifically say, you know. They were, but I would imagine there might have been a few.
Mm. What was the discipline like at the school?
Well, the Jesuits, they used to like to, if they ran things with a pretty iron fist. It was probably very much sort of a high school atmosphere.
Mm.
I never went to the high school, but my brother did, and I can remember there was a lot of, you know, physical discipline. I mean, it wouldn't take some of the Jesuits, you know, too long before they would belt somebody, you know, or punch them or whatever if they felt that they were getting out of line. I mean, that wasn't uncommon at all. And in the university, there wouldn't be too much of that. But I remember a man by the name of Father Murphy. He used to walk around with a great big ruler in his hand who, you know, wouldn't hesitate to whack you with this. This was in university, in math class.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of was his tradition, you know. He was that kind of a teacher. He used to call people bonehead. But so there was very much that kind of relationship between the teachers and the students. The students kind of expected it. It wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's move on. You say, okay, you received your BA in 1957,
mm-hmm.
and then you went on and did your education degree there?
Well, not right then. I went to Winnipeg and worked with Hudson's Bay Company for 3 years as their retail management training. And I often tell people that's where I got my education.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot in those 3 years. I decided I didn't want to stay in the retail business for the rest of my life. I didn't I didn't particularly like any position that was in the company. I found out while I was there that none of the executives in the retail division ever lived to retirement. At that point, no one had ever retired. So after a year, I decided that I would like to go back to school, and I went and talked to the Jesuits in Winnipeg at St. Paul's College. And because of the type of degree I had, which was basically a general arts degree, the program at St. Mary's wasn't very broad, so you would end up with something like 4 years of theology, 4 years of English, 4 years of French, 4 years of history or whatever, you know, whatever. And I had a few others mixed in because I did some science courses and math. So they pretty well told me that I would have to get some subject area together before I could go to graduate school. In the meantime, I wrote back to Father Fogarty, who was then Dean of Education. Education was just sort of starting up at St. Mary's. And after some correspondence with him, decided if I could get my money together. I had a couple of kids by the time that I came back in 1960, I guess it was. Yeah. He would accept me, and that's when I did my BEd. I did part. It was full time, but the courses were all in the evening, the afternoon. So I worked full time. I did my BEd at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think I graduated from college or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I worked with the provincial government. I worked in the as a clerk at the Nova Scotia Hospital, and the work wasn't too demanding. So I had lots of time to study and do assignments and so on while I was at work.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then you did your MA.
Well, I got a job teaching at St. Stephen's School here in Halifax, and I started my MA part-time. And at the end of that year, Father Fogarty was looking for faculty, and he asked me to come on and teach in the Faculty of Education. So I was actually teaching there before I completed my MA. I was quite happy because that was sort of my goal, was to become an academic and teach at university. And the reason I went back and took education was so that I could have summers off to study and get myself qualified to go to graduate school and so on. So when he asked me to come and teach, I thought that was just marvelous. I just bought a house in Dartmouth. And my family was growing. I ended up having 5 children. And he was looking for people who would commit themselves to St. Mary's to stay there. So he said, if you come and teach with us for a couple of years while you finish your MA, then we'll consider helping you go on to do further studies if you're interested in staying.
Oh.
So I taught for those 2 years while I was doing my MA.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And have you been at St. Mary's ever since then?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I took 3 years off to do my PhD in Dalhousie and in the psychology department, and that was after 2 years there, and then I came back to the Faculty of Education.
Okay, let's talk about the changes that you've seen in the Faculty of Education over the time you've been associated with it.
Mm.
It's obviously grown a great deal.
Well, yes, it's not nearly as big as it used to be. Yeah, when I started teaching there were probably less than 20 in the BEd program. I'm not sure how many there would be in the MA. It was part-time. And then I went to Dalhousie for 3 years. I came back. It had started to grow then. And that actually, there was 1 year when we had, I think, about 180 BEd students. And we wouldn't have had as many faculty as we do now, certainly not. We had a lot of part-time people. At that time, I think we limited the people studying MAs to, or Masters in Education to full-time students, so that population really fell down. Then we decided that there was such a a demand for the B.Ed. program, but that's when the job market started to change. And we thought it'd be a good time to raise our standards for admitting people to the B.Ed.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas before all you needed was a degree to get in, then we required a certain grade point average or something, or marks above. You just raised it very slightly. That cut our enrollment down by half. It went from about 150 previous year to 75. That would have been in the year we had 75, would have been about 1979. Fall 78. Because I had been on sabbatical the previous year and came back, and the B.Ed. population cut in half. It really was great because it gave you a chance to breathe. Before, it was really difficult. When you were supervising students in the schools, you would have so many that you would barely get to see them once, and they would be all over the province just to get people placed in the schools. So that cut it down, and then gradually we kept raising our standards and to the point where it is today, where it's on a competitive basis, and we more or less decide how many people we're admitting. We got it down to as low as 40, which allowed us to make changes in the program to improve the quality of education that we're giving to our students. And then the demand kept going up, so we at one time had over 700 applications, but we were only admitting or registering 40 people. We admit a few more.
Yes.
And also our master's program grew at that time by leaps and bounds because we went back to part-time people and it expanded to the point now where we have programs in Prince Edward Island and all in Truro, Bridgewater, and it's quite widespread. And we have both high-end part-time enrollment in our master's program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of master's program was up and went down, and went up. The B.Ed. program went up and went down, and now I think we have 58 students this coming year, which may create some problems for us because some of the things that we could do when we had 40 students, we can't do when we have 60. The problem is the pressure on the schools to be able to handle. It's not what we can do, it's what we can do in cooperation with the schools.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. How about course offerings? How have the individual courses changed?
Well, they haven't really changed that much in the B.Ed. program. The master's program has expanded considerably.
Mm-hmm.
The most notable one's the recent edition of the Teaching English as a Second Language component at the graduate level. But the B.Ed. program, it's changed, but the actual course listings haven't changed. I mean, we probably have, on paper, one of the most traditional B.Ed. programs that you can do. We still require people to do both a history and a philosophy of education, as well as the psychology. I remember probably the biggest change was back in the 70s when we went to special methods courses, where students had an option. Before, we just had a methods course, which was sort of general methods, which applied to anything, which we still have. But then we added credits in specialized areas like teaching of English and so on. We've always just been involved in secondary education for the most part, not elementary. We had tried to move into elementary education at one time, made a presentation to the Senate and the administration, and with the cost of it, they just decided they couldn't afford to do that. So We stayed mainly in secondary education. So one of the big changes, as I say, in the 70s was having special methods courses. There have been courses added to the program, like the government required us to have a course in special education for students who were specially challenged students, teaching those. We're now, this year, I understand, I've been on sabbatical, so I haven't been involved in the discussions, but changing the options so that students don't have to take both philosophy and history of education. Some students will have the option of taking global education and some current issues on sexism, racism, and that type of thing. And we've all, for a long time, had a sociology of education course offered by the sociology department, and our students could take that instead of taking. Problem there was fitting it into a rather tight class schedule. And often the people who would end up taking the sociology course would be people who would be coming from teacher's college, who were getting a BA subsequent to doing their teacher training at Natura.
Okay, so what differences have you noticed in the student body?
Lots. Lots over the years. Well, it was very small, and it was very much sort of a rah-rah institution. There was lots of school spirit and so on when I was an undergraduate. And then, you know, the place grew like Topsy in the 60s and probably grew too fast. It became to what it is now. I think St. Mary's has lost a lot of its character and it's become a very much just a public institution. And although there's sort of a tradition that it's attempted to maintain, my description of what's gone on at St. Mary's is it's been largely attempting to emulate Dalhousie and become, you know, like Dalhousie instead of sort of seeking out its own niche. Now people will say, of course, St. Mary's has always had a niche of community service and that type of thing more than Dalhousie, and that's certainly true. But I think St. Mary's, in long ways, lost lots of opportunities to be really distinct as an institution. And I think that feeling is probably shared by many of the faculty. However, student-wise and their differences, so it was a very small group with lots of spirit when I was there. When I came back in the 60s, it was growing. It became a co-educational institution. There was still a lot. 60s were great in terms of student involvement. It was the time of the hippies and the sit-ins and the love-ins, and we had lots of fun in education. There was lots of controversy. The students were very much involved in the running of the faculty. We had a faculty council where there were just as many students on the council as there were faculty. It was a very democratic time, very exciting, lots going on, lots of controversy. Students involved with everything. And on a larger issue in the university, I can remember students demonstrating about food at the cafeteria, you know, things like that. They had a wonderful man who was looked after the food services back then. His name was Heinz Morstadt. He just found it so much pressure from the students that he just quit and opened his own restaurant in Halifax. But I always thought the food was fantastic with him. It was not like institutional food. He used to put on these big parties for the faculty and so on, and the food was always fantastic. But anyway, the students didn't like it. Maybe it was too fancy for them, I don't know. And so there was that kind of thing. Students were involved. There were students involved with sit-ins in the president's office and sitting in at Senate meetings and so on. And then, you know, I mean, the students sort of just reflect the general trend in society. In the 70s, that kind of died, and then, you know, people are more concerned now. I find students today issues are not a big thing. They're mainly interested in coming in, getting their degree, and seeing if they can find a job. It's very sort of individual-centered. And I suppose, again, that's a reflection of the 80s and so on. So I've seen lots of changes in that. Yeah.
What changes have you noticed in terms of ethnic origin of the students? Have you noticed any?
Well, as I said, back when I was an undergraduate, there were lots of people from the West Indies who used to come, and they were both white and black students. There certainly now are far more Asian students and far more African students and so on, and I think that's great. And it's one of the things I think that, you know, St. Mary's has done is encouraged foreign students to come here. I think it's unfortunate that the government, that we charge them double. things like that, but you know, I'm not involved in making economic decisions, but you know, I think that the more we can educate people, the better off we'll be. Although if you look around the world today, you wonder if that's true or not. Yeah. What's going on? But anyway.
How about the age of students? Have you noticed changing?
Yeah. To some extent. I think there was a period there when there were more mature students. Certainly in education we get more mature students. And that's simply a function, I think, of the number of applications that we have. I'm talking about the VED program now because of our master's program is obviously involved with experienced teachers, so there's a lot of maturity there. But the more applicants you have, I mean, one of our criteria for admitting people is that they have some kind of experience. Like if two people are applying, they've got the same academic qualifications, you're more likely to take a person who's had some kind of life experience, because I think that contributes to their ability to be a good teacher, the more experience you have.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a bias I have, because having worked in business, I've always felt that that would help me be a better teacher.
Okay. What effect do you think the coeducational change had in St. Mary's as an institution?
Well, I think it had a good effect. Mm-hmm. I think that when I was there, it was a boys' school or a men's school. That was very insular. It was very, very locker roomish type of, and then back where I was talking about sort of the physical discipline of the Jesuits, that sort of was again a tradition. I think bringing women onto the campus made the place much more human, realistic, more. Gave it a much broader perspective, and I think it was a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were at the school when the Jesuits gave over administrative control.
Mm-hmm.
What effect did that have?
Well, again, from a faculty point of view, that was a very interesting time. That's when we formed our union and so on. We had the second union at a university in Canada. The university that was first was Notre Dame University in British Columbia, which no longer exists. And maybe doesn't exist practically because they did form it. I don't know. But it was a very controversial time because Owen Carrion, who's in the history department, became president, and there was a great deal of conflict between Owen and the faculty. And the faculty really gelled. Again, this was back in the 60s, I guess. 70s, was it? Yeah. And I can remember faculty meetings going where there were virtually every faculty member would be there. And there was a great deal of upset because 14 faculty were given their notice of termination. And on the recommendation of some administrators at the university to Dr. Carrigan, I understand. I could be wrong on some of these things because so the faculty became very joined against this one man, and all of these people were eventually reinstated. A union was formed because my understanding of I was very much involved in the formation of the union. QP was here trying to organize this, and I was, involved with that side of the organization trying to get an external, some that was independent of academics, and then there was the other Canadian Association of University Teachers, which we eventually remained affiliated with but formed an independent union. So QP was trying to organize this. I lost my train of thought when I started to say that. But, oh yes, the act by which the university was formed gave all power to the Board of Governors. So that, in effect, I remember being at a meeting with It was a Board of Governors meeting, I guess. And I was probably there as a representative of the faculty, because I'm not sure that we even had representation on the board at that time. And somebody saying that they could actually tell us how to dress. And if you read the act, he was right. In other words, the complete control of the university in all its aspects was with the Board of Governors, and they could tell you to do whatever they wanted. So we had to have something that counteracted that. So we went to the Labor Relations Act as a counterbalance to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, as I say, a really interesting time. Again, lots of interest in the faculty and the development in the university. I think the unions had a big effect on the university from an academic point of view. I think it's made it a much stronger academic institution
mm-hmm.
through the things that they've negotiated with the administration over the years.
Yeah. So do you feel that the nature of the institution was changed by the unionization?
Absolutely. I mean, from a paternalistic institution that was run by the Jesuits in a very religious sense, to a very public institution with much changed academic standards and what was expected of the faculty. I mean, you got promoted. I mean, I got promoted to associate professor just by the dean at that time just sending me a letter. I hadn't applied for anything or whatever. He just said, you're now an associate professor next year. You know, and same with when I got tenure. And that was because they liked you, I guess, you know, at that point. Because there were lots of people over the years that they didn't like. And, you know, they lost lots of good academics because of controversies, you know, that maybe over religious issues. You know, this is back some time now. And other controversial issues and so on. They sort of drummed people out. And with the coming of the union, of course, then there were standards set, and it was more difficult to do that, although in some instances it was tried to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had some interesting differences and battles with the union and the university administration over the years.
Okay, those are about all the areas I wanted to cover, unless you can think of anything else that stands out in your mind about St. Mary's.
No, I would say that I covered most of the things, and I mentioned this earlier, but my sort of disappointment over the years with St. Mary's again is that I don't think it ever lived up to its potential. I think it had, you know, as a small institution, it had a lot of potential to be rather unique, and I think it was watered down into what it is today. And yeah, so that's probably the only.